Good evening. If you want to turn over to John, the 19th chapter, we will, and I hope I'm not, no pun intended, beating this resurrection or crucifixion story into the ground. But we're going to continue with that tonight. We've been looking at the seven statements that Jesus made while he was on the cross. And more we're finding that Jesus' last words before his death are actually about calling us to a more significant, God-honoring life. Jesus was dying for us to have the opportunity to live. And tonight, as we look at that third statement that Jesus makes from the cross, we're going to see a very compassionate side of Jesus. We're going to focus more on the setting of this statement than on the words themselves. As Jesus was speaking, what was going on around him? And we're going to see that in Jesus' midst, in the compassion that he had, nearly everyone there had sold him out. Almost everyone that was close to Jesus had left him just when he needed him the most. And we'll pick up there in John 19:25, where it says there that near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that time on, the disciple took her into his home. Now, we learned last week that there was quite a crowd present during Jesus' crucifixion. In this brutal culture, crucifixions were a very big deal. People would come out in droves to watch someone to be executed. It was something very much like an event. Families would come and spend the day watching the victims as they were beaten and tortured, and watch as they died. Very slow and agonizing death. It was a very brutal culture to live in. And we also know that there were a lot of people at Jesus' crucifixion. And people came to jeer him. And this was a part of the sport. This is what made it fun. The insulting that you could throw at the victims and make fun of them. And Jesus' crucifixion was no different. This huge crowd had gathered there to mock. But we're told that only five had came to mourn. And this group of mourners consisted of Mary, the mother of Jesus, Jesus' aunt that name were not given, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene, and the disciple whom Jesus loved, who was most likely John, whose account we just read this evening. When Jesus said, "Here is your son, and here is your mother," it was an incredible demonstration of love and compassion. But let's go into that a little bit deeper. This was more than just a heart-wrenching scene between a mother and her dying son. As you look at the particular setting of this particular scene from the crucifixion, you see that it's a scene that begs a question. Why were there only five compassionate mourners present? Why were there only five people who loved Jesus at this point in his death? Why only five? Christ had no doubt touched thousands of lives. Where were they? Where were the other 11 apostles? Why was there just one present at the cross? And there is a tragic verse in Matthew that gives us some insight to this. In Matthew, the 26th chapter, there it tells where Jesus has been arrested by a mob armed with swords and clubs. And as they're leading Jesus away to this kangaroo court where he's going to stand trial, Jesus turns around to look for his apostles, for those ones that promised to always be by his side. And Matthew 26:56 tells us that the disciples had deserted him and fled. Out of the 12, out of the multitude of people that Jesus touched, taught, and healed, a grand total of five remained at the cross. And the answer begs, or the question begs, why? And to answer that question, I think we need to look at the cross through new eyes. We need to step back in time and look at the cross as something that is offensive. And today we don't have to think very hard. You can find something offensive wherever you look. Everything sometimes in our culture seems offensive, but the cross doesn't. The cross does not offend us. After all, it is the central symbol of our faith. But that wasn't always the case. The cross at one time was very offensive. It wasn't until about the 4th century, after the Roman government had made crucifixions illegal, that the church began to mark itself with the cross. So what makes the cross offensive? Why was the cross so offensive to so many people in Jesus' life that they didn't want to be near it? And I think that there were at least three reasons. First of all, the cross was a disappointment. The show, I'm sure everyone here has seen at one time or another, Everybody Loves Raymond. And if you're familiar with the show, you know that Robert and Raymond are brothers, and Raymond is the golden child of the two. And he always seems to get what he wants, and Robert always gets the shaft. And there's a great scene in one episode where Robert's recalling one Christmas when all he wanted was a Hot Wheels toy set. And that Christmas morning, Raymond opens and he has the Hot Wheels set. And Robert does not. Robert gets something else. Some underwear is what Robert has. And he looks at Raymond and sees that, and he has this sort of disappointment. And we all know kind of how Robert feels at one time or another. But the cross was a different kind of disappointment. The cross was a disappointment on a mammoth scale. During Jesus' lifetime, the Jewish people were under the rule of the Roman Empire. And the Romans ruled over the Jews with an iron fist. They taxed them. They beat them. They put them into slavery. And so the Jews were living under this oppression from the Romans. And Jesus comes on the scene. And Jesus was preaching, and he was teaching about the kingdom of God. But a lot of people quit listening, and they never heard of God. They just heard Jesus talking about a new kingdom. In other words, they were looking for a political kingdom to come about. They thought and hoped that Jesus was going to overthrow the Romans. And instead, here he's executed by them. Why was the cross offensive? Why did so many of Jesus' followers bail out on him? Because the cross was an incredible disappointment for them. Jesus didn't live up to the expectations, and so they abandoned him. And what do we do when Jesus disappoints us? And you may be a little bit uncomfortable with that question. It may sound sacrilegious to suggest that Jesus can disappoint us, but I think if you follow Christ long enough, you're going to find some disappointments. I have a love-hate relationship with the computer, and I can love everything that a computer can do for me, but there's nothing worse than getting through something and not following computer 101 and hitting that control S, saving what you've done, and then the power go out. And you can turn it back on and try to recover, and it's gone. Well, a lot of times, that's how we want to look at God. Like God is some kind of computer. We push all the right buttons, and God does exactly what we want him to do. But again, you know there are times when a computer doesn't work that way. And we're surprised, and we're angry, and we're frustrated and disappointed when we figure out that God doesn't work that way either. So how do you react to those times when God doesn't live up to your expectations? The doctor tells you that the disease has returned. That big investment that you were sure of comes crashing down around you. You learn your spouse is unfaithful. You pray and pray for someone to be healed, and they still die. You say the right things. You do the right things. You push all the right buttons, but it seems as though God has failed you. Well, almost all of Jesus' friends and followers had abandoned him because they were disappointed in him. He had let them down. He let them down because they misunderstood why he came. He didn't come to overthrow the Romans. He didn't come to promise that our lives were going to be a walk in the park. There was a church sign here nearby that said, "Being a Christian makes life easier." And I get what they were trying to say with that sign. But that's not really true, is it? There are times when life is very hard. Jesus did come to give us life, but he didn't promise an easy life. But if people then, just as now, would have stuck by Jesus' side, even though they were disappointed, they would have found that, in fact, Jesus was offering them something much better than some sort of new government. He was offering them a life in the forever presence of God. If they could endure this temporary disappointment, there was a bigger and better prize waiting for them. And nothing today is any different. If we can trust Jesus during the hard times, if we can endure the disappointments, the promise is there of something better ahead. The second reason that a lot of people left Jesus when he was about to be crucified was the cross as a sign of defeat. Crucifixion was a means of execution that the Romans used often. But it was illegal for the Romans to crucify one of their own citizens unless they betrayed the Roman government. Crucifixions were reserved strictly for foreigners that the Romans didn't even believe were fully human, like the Jews, like Jesus. And so we've talked about how brutal the Romans were to the Jewish people. And it's not surprising that every once in a while a group of Jews would get together and they would say, "I don't like living like this." If we got enough people to band together, we could rise up. And so that's what they would do. They would organize a rebel movement, and they would have their guerrilla fighters, and they would begin their revolution. And every time this type of rebellion would begin, the Roman government would unleash its multitude of its military, and the revolt would be crushed. And for the rebels that were captured, there was a special punishment reserved for them, that of a crucifixion. And there are times in history where it's said that at one time the Romans executed 2,000 Jews at one time. Lined up and down the roads of Palestine, they hung them. And so it's not hard to imagine why people ran when they seen Jesus was arrested. They didn't want to be associated with the revolution that Jesus had started, because the crucifixion was a sign that the movement had been defeated. And now, with that in mind, let's look at one of Jesus' most frequently quoted sayings. In Matthew, the 10th chapter, in verse 38, there Jesus tells people that anyone who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Now, in 21st century America, we hear those words very differently than someone in the first century would have heard them. We wear the cross as jewelry. We have it on t-shirts. We use it in decorations in church. There's one behind me right now. Years ago, knights would have put it on their shield as they went into battle. We see the cross as a beautiful sign sign of victory. But to people of Jesus' day, it was just the opposite. One person put it that the cross wasn't about victors going to battle. It was about the losers who were caught. When Jesus tells us to pick up our cross and to follow Him, understand what He's saying. The cross is a sign of defeat. That's why people left Jesus at His crucifixion. And that is why people still leave Him today. To follow Jesus, you have to be a loser to this society. You think about the message of the gospel. To live for God is to die to ourselves. To become the greatest, you have to become a servant. We are called to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us. Our priorities are backwards from those of our culture. We live in a culture that worships the winners. All of you would recognize the swoosh logo for the Nike company. In Greek mythology, Nike was the goddess of victory. The word Nike is synonymous with victory and winning. And they chose this symbol as the name of the company because they know that we are a society that worships winners and that we want to be winners. But if you follow Jesus, you're called to be a loser in every way that our world evaluates winning and losing. But the mystery of God and His kingdom, that it's upside down, topsy-turvy. By losing, we actually win. By dying, we live. Ted Turner is famously quoted as saying that Christianity is a religion for losers. And really, Ted Turner's right. By his standards, by our entire culture standards, following Jesus makes you a loser. Serve instead of take. Forgive instead of get even. That's what it means to be backwards, to be an upside down follower of Jesus. The question is are you willing to be a failure in the eyes of your friends and of your culture? Because that's what it means to take up your cross and follow Jesus. The third and final reason that Jesus was abandoned by nearly everyone who had followed Him at one time or another was that the cross demands a decision. And we are very indecisive at times. Always have been and probably always will be. We think something better is going to come along, and so we don't want to make a hard commitment just yet. We like to keep our options open, but the cross doesn't allow that. The cross demands a decision. Did you ever wonder why God didn't just create us as robots? Why He didn't just design us that we would do whatever He wanted us to do? And the reason is that He didn't do that is because of real love. And real love involves choice. Real love is a decision. God wants us to love Him by choosing Him. And that's why He chose us. Now, last week we talked about if Jesus didn't want to die, He didn't have to. That at any point He could have held up His hands and called the whole thing off, said enough of this, I'm out of here. But instead, He made that decision to suffer and to die. He made a conscious, intentional decision to give His life, not just for those people in the first century, but all those extending through time. And this decision by Jesus demands a decision from us. And it does demand a first-time commitment to Christ. But it doesn't stop there. It continues on after that. It still demands a decision. The cross demands that we make a decision every day of our lives. Every day we have to decide whether we are going to stick with God. Even in our way of thinking, we feel like He's disappointed us. Every day we have to be willing to be the loser in the eyes of our culture and our friends. So why did everyone walk away from the cross? Well, for the very same exact reasons that people still do today. The cross demands a decision to trust God when it doesn't make sense. To live by God's standards instead of our own. To serve when we would rather be served. To give when we would rather take. To forgive when revenge would feel so much better. And to live for God's glory instead of our own. This is why the cross is so offensive to so many people. It demands a decision from us that a lot of us don't want to make. And yet it's in these decisions that hold the key to life that is more significant, more meaningful, and more hopeful. These decisions demand us to call us into a life that is lived with an eternal perspective instead of just a here and now perspective. And so the question remains, what will we decide? And William has selected an invitation song. And as the words of that song are we sing them, think about that. Think of the decision that needs to be made. The friends and our culture, how they think of us. And think of not turning back to that way of life. The cross demands a decision. And we offer that invitation for you now as we stand and we sing.